As has been expected for months now, NFL owners voted Tuesday to expand the regular season from 16 games to 17, beginning in the upcoming 2021 regular season. And we now welcome in our NFL reporter, Kimberly Martin, and three-time Super Bowl champ, Teddy Bruschi. Ladies, gentlemen, so good to see you all. First of all, Teddy, I don't know where you've been big time on Countdown.
My brother.
You're always big time with all your Super Bowl rings, but it's about time you're back here slumming with us.
Good.
So good
finally,
to see you.
Finally, I mean, it's great to be back with you guys.
And Molly,
good to see you.
And Molly, let me tell you, as a former print reporter spanning 17 years, we bow down to the greatnesses, the likes of the lovely Kimberly. We bow down to her. What's going on, you?
Hello, everybody like this, Kimberly. Let me tell you. And Kimberly also has a fresh new podcast coming out today, First Take, Her Take. So check that out, her and the ladies. Kimberly, I'm going to start with you. Do you think NFL players are upset about this, adding the 17th game?
Well, we at least saw Alvin Kamara is upset. I think there are players who feel like him, but should they be upset? No, and yes. Because look, this was voted on in the CBA. The 17-game season, that was a foregone conclusion. That's not something that just popped up suddenly and caught players by surprise. So, no, they shouldn't be upset because they knew what was coming. However, that CBA passed by a very slim margin, 60 votes. So that tells me that not all players were on board with this new CBA. So clearly they have room to be upset, but, you know, yes, because look, we know what owners are, right? We know what they care about, money. And they believe that, you know, the more we have games, the more revenue that comes in, that's good for everybody. But should players be mad at owners, the union, or themselves? Because there's an opportunity to fight the man, fight the system if you want, but all guys have to be on board. And I think football is a different beast where it's a lot harder to get all of these guys on board on the same page to go after the league.
Yeah. And Teddy, it's also hard to get on the field each week. So go ahead, yeah.
It is, Molly. And Kim's right. I mean, it depends on what stage of your career you're in. I mean, if I'm in my third year, fourth year, hey, let's go 17. I'm ready to go 18 or 19. But those veterans get up there.
Yep.
And those are the ones that really know about how hard it can be to even survive 16. So they knew it was coming, yes, but still, there are going to be guys that, I don't know, does the NFL or players figure out some type of form of load management? They're like, hey, man, I mean, to make it to 17, 16 and 17, maybe I sit this one out. That type of perspective is always going to be thought about. I listened to Shaq Barrett when he was on earlier, and players like him, they're thinking about sack records. I mean, they're thinking about, oh, man, how many sacks can I get in 17 games? Can I break Michael Strahan's record? I'm sure Mahomes is talking about, can I throw for 6,000? So there's a lot of excitement about it also throughout the league.
Teddy Bruschi, I miss you, my brother. It's good to see you. And, of course, like I said, Kimberly, you know how much I love you, girl. Here's the bottom line. To me, I don't know how to – I don't want to say – it's much ado about nothing, because I'm not trying to shove aside the issue of safety. One game can cost you your career in the NFL. We understand how violent the sport is. Please don't get me wrong. Where I got into an argument the other day with Dan Orlovsky, and I want both of y'all to give me y'all take on what I'm about to break down. Let's stop acting like guys got to play all 17 games. Let's stop acting like they can't get away with skipping a game. It's a 17-game season. I understand that. But in a sport as violent as the National Football League, yeah, you might be too injured to play, but there have been times where guys are hurt, but they could still play if they had to, but they're allowed to rest because their body has been through so much, et cetera, et cetera. We understand it's a 53-man roster, it's 46 on game day. We get all of that, but the flip side to it is the reality. And the reality is that because football is so violent, you do have a legitimate excuse when you sit out a game. Almost no one is questioning it. So even though it's a 17-game season, I'm saying, wait a minute. I've seen guys sitting out once they've clinched the division title because we want them ready to play for the playoffs and things of that nature. Well, we want this guy ready. So even though he could come back this week, we gonna hold him for another week or two because we want him to get even healthier and 100%. We've seen all of these rationales exercised in the National Football League forever. So considering that and the fact that there has been no changes to the schedule since 1978, so we're talking about a 43-year drought where there were no modifications whatsoever pertaining to schedules, I don't understand for the life of me why guys are acting like, oh, it's a 17-game season. That's pretty whack because I don't feel like playing 17 games when most dudes ain't playing the 16 games. What's the problem?
Yeah, Stephen, you've got legitimate points there, and it's also going to be about, you know, philosophy and also the importance of games. Will training staffs and coaching staffs sort of know now the extra length of the season, and instead of rushing a player back to play a game that's so critically important, know that maybe this one's not as important because we got more important ones down the road? Sure, that's also something to consider in terms of injury and how you rush players back. Also, how much of a gift and how much of a plus an advantage, almost an unfair advantage, to fight for that bye week. With only one team having a bye week, it's like, man, you get that. It's almost an unfair advantage that you get to rest before the playoffs while everyone else goes through that grueling season. So that's something to play for. So how head coaches and training staff manage it in terms of injuries and if you're hurt or you're injured is going to be interesting to me.
It's crazy to me as an NFL reporter that now, because Teddy brings up a great point, I'll probably be talking about load management as an NFL reporter. That's wild to me because we hear about it in the NBA all the time. But, you know, Stephen A., is this not a game where we get, like, fans get on guys when they don't play? Like, with football, it's like, you need to be out there unless you're really hurt. Like, I've covered a lot of teams where guys broken toe, like, guys go out and give it their all every week. And so to say, like, well, why can't they just sit down and not play that week? I think it sounds good in theory, but
can I answer that?
That's not football. That's not football. I mean, I never played the game, but after covering it, I mean, and there will be an 18th game at some point. We're going to get another game.
Well, let me come back with this. Load management in the NBA, we absolutely lament. There is no question about that. But when we talk about the National Football League, I don't see fans complaining about dudes that's not playing for a game or anything like that, considering how violent it is. It's usually the NFL itself, meaning folks that work within the NFL, and pressure that players innately feel emanating from front office and the coaching staff that plays a significant role in the pressure applied to them playing. Not necessarily from the fans when it comes to the NFL, unless you miss too many games. And we're not talking about that here. You talk about one.
So the game is so violent that guys should sit, but it's cool that we add an extra game? I just want to make sure
I
understand.
If you're going,
explain why.
Because you can get paid. Hold on. You can get paid for the 17 games, even if you only play 16 or 15 or 14. That's the point. It's about the check. If they get the check for 17 games, that's the objective. Find a way to wiggle your way out of one game a year. You can do it.
I thought it was about the ring. And to get the ring, you got to play. I didn't know it was about the checks. I thought it was about the chips. Teddy Bruschi, don't be a stranger. Always good to see you.
I had a family emergency. I got a flat tire. All right. Yes,
I'm Happy Easter to you both.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Staying in the NBA here, off-court talk involving Nets star Kevin Durant on Tuesday as actor Michael Rapaport made public by posting on Twitter a series of direct messages from December he says are between him and Nets star Kevin Durant. Following a TNT interview, Rapaport criticized Durant on Twitter, which led to an expletive-laden exchange in which Durant, according to Rapaport, sent the following messages via Instagram DM to Rapaport. Quote, "I swear I'm going to spit in your face when I see you, you dirty expletive. You expletive for even caring how I do an interview. All you do is expletive other men for attention. How expletive are you? Your wife doesn't even respect your expletive." Durant tweeted an apology of sorts yesterday saying, "Me and Mike talk crazier than this on the regular, and today he's pissed. My bad, Mike. Damn." Stephen A., what should the NBA and the Nets do about KD's comments?
Well, I mean, listen, you know, you a little fine or whatever the case may be. It was just words. Unfortunately, you don't like it. Words do matter. I certainly don't mean to come across as if they don't. But if you're the National Basketball Association, Kevin Durant getting into a private heated exchange with somebody not associated with the NBA and Michael Rapaport, who's a well-known figure, is not the crime of the century. It's certainly not something that's condonable. It shouldn't be applauded in any way. But again, it's not the crime of the century. And I want to reiterate what I said earlier. Michael Rapaport, you violated all kinds of street rules. You don't sit up there and take private DMs and reveal it to the public like that. You just don't do that. That was between you and Kevin Durant, and he had no business publicizing that. So Michael Rapaport was wrong in that regard. Kevin Durant was wrong because it was a bit excessive. It was definitely threatening. It was unnecessary. It came across as a bit too truculent and belligerent, and it brings to mind the level of sensitivity that Kevin Durant has religiously been accused of having. He is considered amongst many to have the thinnest skin of any superstar we've ever seen. And that's saying a lot. And when you look at it from that perspective, let's take into account some of the things that Michael Rapaport was highlighting. The argument originally took place when Kevin Durant showed up on the air being interviewed by Charles Barkley in TNT. And Kevin Durant gave one-word answers, very terse, very aloof and standoffish. And you do find yourself looking at these guys and saying, what the hell are you so mad about? What are you so angry about? It's the game of basketball. That's what we're talking about here. What's the matter with you? Now, they'll say it's their livelihood. It's their livelihood. I'll tell you what standing rule that I have, Molly. I appreciate and embrace any level of ultra sensitivity from an athlete who's trying to get the paper. You in a contract year, you trying to get paid, and somebody could compromise your quality of life. I'm down for that. I understand. So there needs to be a heightened level of a sensitivity if you could potentially get in the way of somebody making their bag. I get all of that. But you got cast that sign for $150, $200+ million. Kevin Durant's missed 26 games. I understand it was a torn Achilles. We understand and appreciate the fact that he tried to come back and play in the NBA Finals. But last year when you were out the entire season, you got paid. This year, you've already missed 25 games. You're still getting paid. Got your commercials and everything else. What the hell are you mad about? Why are you looking at everybody and acting that way? Why are you on social media arguing with people half your age and they ain't saying that, you know, people that you don't know, people that haven't done anything or whatever the case may be? What is all of that about? And you do find yourself asking these questions, and then you talk to people around the league who cover the NBA. And they will tell you that, you know, not James Harden, because everybody's been saying that he's, you know, he's been great this year. But when it comes specifically to KD and Kyrie, a lot of people in the media, a lot of people with various organizations have talked about how unlikable they are. Now, I don't happen to agree with that. Kevin Durant and I don't really talk. Kyrie and I damn sure don't really talk or whatever the case. I respect the hell out of both of them. They're both superstars and they're both box office and they're both champions. We want to see them play. And so when you're talking about them playing or lack thereof, the fact that they could get on an interview and just give terse responses, or like Kyrie announced before the season that you're not talking to the media, that there are things more important than basketball. Well, we all have things more important than basketball going on in our lives. But basketball is the escape that you signed on to help to provide for all, to all of us, to relieve us of the stress and ails that really invade our lives. And you signed on for it in this particular instance with a Kyrie at the price of 4 years, $140 million. And so when you look at it from that perspective and you get paid that exorbitant amount of money and you have 6 months of the year off anyway, then to be off during the season is bad enough. But if you're Kevin Durant and you appear to have attitude as well, there are people that are saying, what's wrong with you? And those are the kind of things that they have to pay attention to and to make sure that they guard against. Because let me tell you something. Once upon a time, years and years ago, before the advent of social media, guys were begging folks to talk about basketball because you have folks in the media getting all into cats' personal lives. You went out to a nightclub. You went out to a casino. You did this or that. They were writing that stuff. Wasn't me, but they were writing that stuff. And these guys were like, wait a minute, the game is fine. It's all this other stuff that we have a problem with. Well, now we got a new generation of players that are getting paid more money than guys from previous generations ever got paid. And they actually have a problem with you talking to them about basketball. What possible excuse can you have for having a problem with somebody talking to you about a job you signed up for to perform in front of millions? How could you possibly have a problem with folks asking you basketball questions? That's what they're going to have to answer as times move ahead, particularly considering the times that we're living in now, COVID-19, the pandemic, over 40 million people were furloughed, over 20 plus million people lost their jobs permanently. You've got you got the economy struggling because of all of those things. People ain't got time to watch, look, and listen to cats that don't have those concerns, to act like we're bothering them because we're talking to them about a game they signed up to play and perform for publicly. That's what they're going to have to realize.
Yeah. I find this conversation very interesting on a lot of levels. There's a couple parts here, Stephen A. I remember when I first joined the show back in 2015, and I came from NFL Network, and obviously it's this big stage. It's you and Skip, and I'm getting all these kind of crazy comments, and I'm taking over for Carrie Champion, who did an exceptional job, and she still continues to in her new arenas. But I remember Skip saying to me, sure, Molly, don't even look at the comments. Why are you going to look at the comments? Do you need somebody to validate you either way? Do you need someone to tell you you're great? Or do you need someone to tell you that you're not, to work harder? And I really try to stick by that. I really try not to look at it because it doesn't do me any good. The only thing I can say, so I look at somebody like Kevin Durant and I say, you know, you're a multimillionaire. You're one of the best in the game. Why do you even deal with these people? Why do you even bother? That's why I said the quote about the eagles and the pigeons. The only thing I can think of is if he does it, if he thinks it's fun or to motivate himself. But I truly don't understand it.
Well, let me try to explain it for you, Molly. And please, to the producers, leave us up on the split screen so I can see Molly when I make this explanation. On far too many occasions, people go beyond the lines. As your husband, Jalen Rose, has highlighted on numerous occasions, very astutely, I might add, because he's a guy that knows. Mm-hmm. There are many, many occasions where people in the media go beyond the lines and get in the business that is not their own. Like, for example, I have a standard rule, and I've been a reporter for over 27 years, and I have a standard rule. Mm-hmm. The only time your personal life is my business is when you make it my business because you end up in the police blotters. If it ain't in the police blotters, all right, and you're not breaking the law, I got nothing to say. It's none of my business. But your game is my business. Because you've decided to perform that at a public forum, and I get to chronicle and judge accordingly. Because that all assists in promoting and marketing the sport, which is why the media has free passes to games and the customer has to pay. Because they know we're assistants in promoting the brand that is the NFL, the NBA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when people cross those lines, they have a point. But the problem with the players in this generation, the advent of social media has removed them from feeling compelled to ingratiate themselves with conduits, with messengers that disseminate a message to the masses. They feel they don't need us because they got followers and they can tweet and they can sit up there and say what they want to say without answering questions, without being probed or anything like that. And as a result, they're basically saying, bump y'all, not all of them, because there's a lot of guys, like, for example, we talk about LeBron James all the time. Let's give respect where respect is due. Mm-hmm. LeBron, for the most part, is a complete class act that fulfills his obligations admirably. Kobe Bryant did it. Dwayne Wade did it. I just got on Russell Westbrook. But Russell Westbrook talks to the media after games and stuff like that. He fulfills his obligation. James Harden does it. He came from Houston, went to Brooklyn. He stood right in front of the media and answered their questions. It's just that you've got too many guys that haven't ingratiated themselves with anybody that are messengers. So they don't want to talk to you, but then they want to get upset at the message that you sent that they got from others when they refused to talk to you. So they don't accept enough culpability in that regard, and that's when they hurt themselves.
Stephen A., let me say this really quickly, and to our producers, James Dunn, let me just say this really quickly. Actually, one of the last conversations I had with Kobe Bryant was about social media, and he had said, I would have never been on social media as a player because it would have been too much of a distraction. The last thing I want to say really quickly, I wish you had time to respond. Where it gets tricky with Michael Rapoport, we have all had private conversations that we would not be proud of if they came to light. I have, you have, everybody, whether it's social media, whether it's over text. The problem with these is the homophobic, misogynistic, that language, that's where the Nets might have to deal with it because that did come to light and he did use that offensive language. And that's where this particular incident gets really tricky.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Westbrook's numbers last night mean absolutely nothing to me because even though that's great numbers, that's what Westbrook can do. We all know this. He's a former league MVP. He's the most athletic point guard we have ever seen in NBA history. Bradley Beal and you are in the backcourt together, and y'all are 17-28 in the Eastern Conference. I mean, damn. You've played with some great, great players over the years, some talent, and not a single title to show for it. If I'm going to look at everybody else, whether it's LeBron and Kyrie and Steph and everybody else, I got to look at that too. The numbers are the numbers. That's Russell Westbrook. He could do that to anybody. But I'm at a point in time in his career where it's like, it ain't about that no more. It's about whether or not you can get to another level to win the chip. That's where I'm at.
All right, let's do that. So this was Stephen A. yesterday, and that was after Westbrook's historic night in Washington. Westbrook wasn't happy with the remarks, made the following comments in his postgame presser yesterday. A championship don't change my life. I'm happy. I was a champion once I made it to the NBA. I grew up in the streets. I'm a champion. My legacy is not based on what I do on this court. It's about how many people I'm able to impact. It's very important that you don't let negativity seep in. It's been like that my whole career. No other player takes the heat that I take constantly. And finally, we have my guy, the Hall of Famer and NBA TV analyst Isaiah Thomas joining us on the phone. Isaiah, you got us?
I got you. I am here.
Perfect. Great to have you with us. I can't wait to get your take on all these juicy topics. But Stephen A., what is your response to what Westbrook just said about you?
Well, as I said at the top of the show, I respectfully disagree. And his comments from his wonderful wife, Nina, were far more incendiary towards me. And I just want to say that I applaud her for coming to the defense of her man. I think that any man that has a wonderful woman in his life, those are the kind of qualities that are some of the qualities that make them so wonderful in our eyes. The fact that she would come to his defense the way that she did. Plus, she has credibility. She's his wife. She's a former basketball player at UCLA, if I remember correctly. She's a legal therapist. As well. She's a businesswoman. She's a sensational woman. And obviously, if she wants to support him, I totally get where she's coming from. And I meant no disrespect whatsoever. And I'm sorry that she took it that way. But I did not stutter with what I said. And I don't take back a single solitary word that I uttered out of my mouth. I made it a point yesterday, as I have done continuously, to rave about the greatness of Russell Westbrook. I didn't say he was a scrub. I didn't say he can't play. I said he's great. I said he's destined for the Hall of Fame. His talents just demand that, along with his numbers. What I said was, is because he's been so great, those numbers are ordinary. I am not going to salivate over you having a triple-double in the midst of a season that has you 13 games under 500 outside of the playoff picture in the Eastern Conference with Bradley Beal at your backcourt, mate, even though Bradley Beal isn't in the lineup at this particular moment in time due to injury. The fact of the matter is that when you look at Russell Westbrook, he's been going home in the first round the first 3 years after Kevin Durant left. James Harden sent him home. Donovan Mitchell sent him home. Damian Lillard sent him home. He had numbers. Didn't have the support from Paul George 1 year that he needed, and we get all of that. But the results were the results. You go to Houston last year, you bow out to the Los Angeles Lakers. No shame in all of that. But now you're in Washington. So Russell Westbrook has played with Kevin Durant, James Harden, Serge Ibaka, Reggie Jackson, Paul George, Victor Oladipo, James Harden again, okay, and now Bradley Beal. He doesn't have a ring to show for it. That's not entirely his fault. Hell, I'd mentioned Sam Presti. You're the man running basketball operations for OKC. And you know what? There's no championship to show for it. So Russell Westbrook is not alone. But what I did point out, Isaiah, was that Russell Westbrook, if he improved his perimeter shot, particularly playing all of those years in the same conference as Steph Curry and Damian Lillard, perhaps he may have found better results. That's what I said. I stand by that. I certainly said nothing about his character. I love the brother. He's as real and authentic as it gets. He's charitable. He's philanthropic. He's a soldier, a warrior, a leader. I got mad love and respect for Russell Westbrook. I just wish that he had worked on his perimeter shot better. I don't see anything wrong with saying that, and I don't think it warranted his response about generational wealth and all of that stuff, and certainly didn't warrant his wife's response, although I certainly respect her coming to the defense of her man. That's what I said, Isaiah. Floor is yours.
I'm going to speak, and I think there's a lot here to unpack, because and Molly, I'll include you in this also, because all of us as classified minorities in this space, in this system, when we talk about, you know, being champions off the court, Stephen A., your journey as a, you know, a four-year scholarship player at Winston-Salem playing for, you know, one of the greatest coaches ever and, you know, Big House Gaines, you know, you are a champion off the court also. You know, in your industry, you've become a champion. Molly, your path to getting to where you got to, you know, as a minority, as a female in this space, has made you a champion off the floor. Now, inside your arena, you become a champion inside the arena. And where Westbrook is at is he's been undoubtedly a champion off the floor, classified, you know, black, colored, Negro in this country. The pathway that he's had to take, all of us have come through extreme poverty. Yes, he is a champion off the floor in terms of making it to the NBA, where there's only, you know, 400, 450 that really gets to play and compete in the NBA. So you are a champion there. Now when you get inside the arena, you know, when we want to use the word champion, and there are different levels to this. When Russell Westbrook, MVP of the league, matching numbers of Oscar Robertson and Magic Johnson, doing things that those two have done, when the champions walk into the room, okay, there are different levels to all championships and who gets respected for their championship journey, okay? Now, Russell Westbrook, we all want to see him in that championship room. So the numbers that we see him putting up every night, while they are impressive, they are historical, we ask, okay, can you get to the next level in terms of being a champion in this arena? And a lot of superstars don't make it to that next level of being champions in this arena. It is a very difficult path. Now, what some superstars have done is they've demanded more from their coaches, from their general managers, from their teams to make sure that they have the right support system. If Russell Westbrook is guilty of anything, it's not being demanding of his coaching staff, of the organization that he's playing for, to say, hey, I want more. As an MVP caliber talent player, you should be demanding MVP talented coaching. You look at the best players who have ever played in our league, most of them have experienced and had great Hall of Fame coaches. So, Stephen A., you can't throw this all on Westbrook. You have to move over to that bench and look at who he's been playing for the last 8, 9 years mm-hmm. also.
Well, Isaiah Thomas, I respect where you're coming from. I don't disagree with your overall synopsis. What I would challenge you on is the relevancy that has to do with what I said yesterday based on Russell Westbrook's performance the night before. My comments were never, I don't care about Russell Westbrook's numbers and accomplishments, period. I said, at this point, I don't care about it. In other words, we've seen what you've done. We know what you can do. We know how great you are. So numbers that you might have produced in the middle 40-plus games into a regular season in the year 2021 doesn't mean anything to me coming from Westbrook at this point because he's made it so ordinary. He averaged a triple-double when he won the MVP, had 42 triple-doubles that season. He's averaging a triple-double right now. The guy's phenomenal. What's the one thing missing? And I said, look, if you watch and look at his game, here's why I think the reason might be in terms of his struggles from the perimeter, specifically from three-point range, why you got marksmen that he's going up against, particularly in the postseason. So if I make that argument, I don't think that warrants, I'm a champion in life. I've seen plenty of champions that are unhappier than me. I don't care whether I win a championship or not. That's not going to define me. Things like that. You can say that when it's over, but while you're playing now and you're getting paid and the patrons are out there clamoring for championships, winning records and things of that nature, that comes along with it because you're competing. Then he also said, hey, I see broadcasters on television messing up people's careers, I'm paraphrasing, messing up people's career in college, you know, denying them the opportunity to get ahead because of the critique that you provided. Well, actually, that's not true. It's them watching their game, looking at what they're doing on the court against their contemporaries and judging who's better and who's worse. That's what comes with it. That's how he became who he is. Because we see everybody can't be Russell Westbrook. What's the problem with that?
There's no problem with that. There's a duality in both of your arguments. And the duality is that he's taken, he's shifted the championship to the outside of the arena and said that he's a champion outside of the arena, which we all agree with. Now, inside of the arena, the critique that we all have of him is that, hey, championships matter. Winning matters. Numbers are great statistically for the video games. They're great in terms of negotiation. But when it's time to win, you get judged by do you win championships. Hey, Chris Paul is under the same type of pressure right now that Westbrook is under. And Chris Paul has been under this pressure for a number of years. He's got numbers, but does he have rings? Okay, and we've demanded, because Chris Paul has talent that should, you know, equate to rings. Okay, we've said Chris should have won a ring at some point in time. Westbrook is under the same type of pressure. Pressure comes with what we do inside the arena. Heavy critique comes with what we do inside the arena. And when you are a max player and you are the driver of the bus, your job and your responsibility is to deliver that championship. And if you don't have the support pieces around you, a la like LeBron James figured out early in his career, and he said, I don't have enough in Cleveland, so I have to go to the school of winning, the Miami Heat, and learn from Pat Riley and graduate from that academy, take my knowledge from that academy, bring it back to Cleveland and say, this is how we do it. Westbrook has not been that defiant when it comes to searching out championship rings.
Am I right in saying that, because often I bring this up, Isaiah Thomas, I say that on numerous occasions throughout my years of covering the NBA, I religiously had Hall of Famers approach me and say, Stephen A., when it comes to basketball, don't forget to uphold the standard, the same standard that you held the rest of us to. You make sure you hold the modern day players to as well. It's about winning. Am I right in saying that all of y'all Hall of Famers feel that way?
I am one of those players who have religiously called you and have said, don't lower the bar. Because winning championships, they do matter. That's why you play. That's why we rank Bill Russell over Wilt Chamberlain in terms of winning. Russell was the most winning player. Okay, but Chamberlain has all the numbers of dominance, okay? But winning championships matter. From your coach to my coach to why we play the game. You know, as Herm Edwards say, you play the game to win. Now, money comes with that. Outside responsibilities and taking care of your family, that comes with it. But at the same time, the only reason why you put on a jersey and you make it to the 450 NBA players, when you become one of those top 24 players, and then you become one of those top 10 players, and then you get to the top 6 or 7 players in the league, that level is different. Stephen A., when I walk into the Hall of Fame and we have those Hall of Fame inductments, okay, there are levels in the Hall of Fame. You know, we all Hall of Famers, but then there's a group of us who stand on one side and say, okay, we were champions, you know, and some of you wasn't. Mm-hmm. And that's just how it goes. When you see Shaq and Barkley arguing on TNT every night, Shaq is quick to say, he and Kenny Smith both, they are quick to say, hey, Charles, you don't have a ring. So this is a conversation that you can't participate in. That's how it is in sports.
Thank you.
Zeke, let me transition here. Stephen A., do you mind if I transition?
And I want to ask you this, Isaiah. So we were having a conversation earlier, and obviously this kind of touches on it because we're talking about the scrutiny that players face. And we were talking about Kevin Durant. So he got into an altercation on social media with actor Michael Rapaport, and then Michael made those DMs, that conversation public. He used some offensive language, and he looked a bit thin-skinned in having this back and forth with him. What are your thoughts on Kevin Durant engaging in this type of behavior? And do you think the Nets should do anything because there were some homophobic and misogynistic comments?
So, first of all, we all know Michael Rapaport around the NBA. And he's famous for his acting. He's famous for his rants. And, you know, he's part of the Big Three. And he and Kevin Durant were having a private conversation, DMing each other. Now that that's been made public, now the public has to weigh in, and now leagues and everything else have opinions about their private conversation, unfortunately, which was made public by Michael. And all of us say that shouldn't have happened, but now that it has happened, okay, now everybody has to say, okay, what are we going to do about this? The team has to make a choice. The league has to make a choice. And it's unfortunate that those things were being said because, you know, they go, I'm sure both of them go back and forth in, you know, their own way and their own language in terms of the way they speak to each other privately. But now this private conversation has been made public. And everyone has to weigh in.
Michael Rapaport was wrong for divulging a private conversation. You broke all kind of cardinal rules in that regard. He was wrong, and there's no defense for that. Even though I'm sure he would say the second that Kevin Durant brought up his wife, that's what tipped him over the edge. Fair enough. In the case of Kevin Durant, we have a bigger concern at this particular moment in time. I will remind everybody that Donald Sterling was exiled from the NBA because of a private conversation. I mean, why do you have to be around black people? I mean, why do you have to do that to this little kitty cat? That's what she called herself or whatever the case may be. And she privately taped this conversation, secretly taped this conversation and revealed it publicly. And as a result, you had players that were contemplating boycotting the playoffs if this man wasn't pushed out of the league. And I still remember to this very day what an absolute shock it was when Adam Silver went up to the podium and said, Donald Sterling is suspended for life, or is banned for life. And those two words, for life, just rocked the foundation of the NBA world because no one saw that coming. It was a private conversation. And one of the things that owner Mark Cuban had said at that particular moment in time is that he was leery of it opening a Pandora's box. Because if that's a reason to get rid of him, what are we going to do moving forward? Now we fast forward to now. This was a private conversation that should have never been revealed. Michael Rapaport should not have done that. We understand that. But as Molly, you pointed out, the fact is that Kevin Durant said things that were very misogynistic and homophobic. And you're going to have folks clamoring to the league office who is investigating the matter, from what I've been told. They are investigating the matter. Security for the NBA is investigating the matter. The matter will be handed to Byron Spruill, who runs operations for the NBA. And the anticipation is that him and Adam Silver will collaborate and ultimately reach a conclusion as to what the ramifications and repercussions will be for Kevin Durant. I don't imagine it will be much. I surmise it may be a fine. But understand, you're going to have people recalling what happened to Donald Sterling. They're going to point out that he's a white man and he said this and he said that and he's banned for life. But Kevin Durant is a young black man and look what he said. And what are you going to do about him? That's the kind of issue, the web that Kevin Durant has himself in. And if you're Kevin Durant and if you're watching, it's a simple question, that you should ask only yourself in the privacy of your own thoughts or with your wonderful family and your wonderful mom and everybody else. Was this worth it? You couldn't walk away. You got to go off like that and put yourself in that kind of compromising position all because Michael Rapaport got on you about your interview with Charles Barkley? Really? That's what these guys have to ultimately ask themselves. Some of the things they get upset about and get all up in a tizzy about, the heightened level of sensitivity for almost no reason whatsoever. Why are you bringing this down upon yourself? For what? That's what Kevin Durant's going to have to do.
No question. I don't think this conversation is going away. Isaiah, thank you so much for being with us. Obviously, come back, join us again soon.
Thanks, Zeke.
When we can see you in person and things are back to normal. Great to have you and your perspective as always, and send the family my love.
Thank you. I will. And good luck to both of you, champions in the arena and outside of the arena.
We're trying. Appreciate
you,
that.
Bro. Thank
a huge
you so
compliment
much.
Coming from you. Stephen A., we got about 30 seconds left. Any final touches you want to make on the show? We covered a lot of ground today.
I cover the NBA. I cover sports overall, but I am attached at the hip to the NBA. I love the NBA, and I love the players. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to call it like I see it in terms of your on-court play. That will never change for Russell Westbrook nor anybody else. That's who I am.
All right. Thank you all for being with us. We'll be back at it tomorrow. As always, have a fabulous day. See you at 10.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting LectricEbikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.